Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of December 2nd, 2016. And today we are joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good. Well, it's December, believe it or not. It's December of 2016. D.R., there's lots and lots and lots of stuff going on. It is oftentimes difficult to see the thread through it all, but I think there is a little bit of a thread. First of all, let's talk about a story that's been going on now for a while, and it's heading to a conclusion, I think, next week, or maybe not a conclusion, but some sort of a confrontation next week, is the Dakota Access Pipeline. Tell me, what's happened there lately?
Well, obviously, there's been a push by the Army Corps of Engineers to basically have water protectors clear out by December the 5th. There's now a push by the governor, I believe his name's Dalrymple. He's essentially declared some sort of state of emergency, trying to get them out as soon as possible. There's this sort of obsession on the part of the political and you know, law enforcement apparatus in North Dakota to sort of get these protests over with. But obviously, you know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And to that end, a number of former veterans, more than 2,000 of them, are beginning to show up in North Dakota, vowing to form a human shield to protect the water protectors. A lot of these veterans are outraged over the images of, you know, dogs and water cannons and pepper spray and reportedly, you know, concussion grenades being thrown at these water protectors. And they're basically saying they're going to stand up and to try to defend them. Now, as it turns out, according to Reuters, some pro-pipeline veterans are basically telling them to get lost, basically regarding them as, to use that old 60s term, outside agitators. That raises the specter of potential conflict in just a few days from now between pro-pipeline and anti-pipeline veterans, which would be
not interesting,
to say the least. Yeah.
I mean, what I've seen says that there's a December 5th eviction notice that's been served, but all of a sudden the Corps of Engineers is saying they're not going to forcibly evict anyone. So that I think it looks as if the protests will continue on past the 5th. From what I've said, I've heard that there is a blizzard or a snowstorm recently, the 6 inches of snow on the ground there. The governor, Dalrymple, has decided not to plow the roads, not to allow food or propane to go into the camp, basically trying to isolate it. And it's my impression, I think it's something we talked about a couple of weeks ago, was that the company that's trying to build the Dakota Access Pipeline needs to have the gas flowing by January 1st or they lose their financing. And so I think you say there's an obsession on the part of the politicians. I think they're obsessed about getting the people out of the way so they can finish the construction under the river and have gas going, and the money flows as the gas flows. And I think we will be watching that story rather carefully because it is heading to a confrontation, and we hope it is peaceful. We hope that it's I mean, you and I have spoken already about calling on President Obama to do something here. He hasn't. Who knows? But it continues.
And when you mentioned that Governor Dalrymple was trying to prevent any sort of heating supplies, any sort of propane from getting in, Reuters notes that the temperature is in North Dakota is expected to drop to 6 degrees Fahrenheit next week. So I hate to say it, we could look at the prospect of, because of Governor Dalrymple's actions, people potentially freezing to death.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's a very high-stakes game going on out there, and we are watching from afar, and I guess hope that President Obama steps in. We will put in the show notes the phone number of the White House and the phone number of Governor Dalrymple. Not that he's going to give a hoot if you call, but certainly Mr. Obama may care more. So I think So I guess, you know, the reason the Dakota Access Pipeline issue is one that's forefront in our consciousness is it goes several ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
In one direction, we have a discussion that you and I have touched on in the past, is that climate hawks, climate activists need to build a broader alliance, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need to reach out across the traditional divides. And I think that for me personally, the Dakota Access Pipeline thing has been informative, because it started out, I was saying, oh, there's a pipeline, we all got to stop that pipeline because of the climate implications.
Mm-hmm.
But as you look more and more, you realize there's very specific local issues the Native Americans have for just environmental justice, but just pure justice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons it becomes important to support these other groups, especially in the age of Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there's a parallel thing that's happening this week that is important to know about, and that's this the Fight for 15 Alliance. Let me just
mm-hmm.
put that. I mean, that's a similar thing. I mean, that is an alliance that climate activists need to support, because everything, I mean, it's all a continuous thing. I mean, the more
mm-hmm.
progressive opposition to Trump and the more progressive ideas are advanced, it helps everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you
mm-hmm.
see, I mean, have you seen anything about this Fight for 15 thing?
Yes, this week there were protests in some 340 cities across the United States, according to The Guardian, calling for an increase of the minimum wage to $15 an hour. The Guardian notes, quote, the Fight for 15 has grown into one of the nation's largest progressive movements, alongside movements by undocumented immigrants, Black Lives Matter, and environmental activists fighting global warming. And obviously, as you note, there's a kinship between those who want a livable wage and those who want a livable climate.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we can't help noting the irony that so many of these fast food entities not only underpay their workers, but in terms of the products they produce, the carbon footprint of their products is nothing to sneeze at, basically.
Yeah, just not to go too far astray, but that was an interesting point from the Leonardo DiCaprio movie, that
mm-hmm.
the forests over in the Pacific, Asia Pacific, are being burned up so they can grow palm oil, because
mm-hmm.
the palm oil is cheap, and the palm oil is what goes into most of these fast foods. And
mm-hmm.
so you're quite right. I mean, there is, again, a tandem kind of reason to be allied.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think that the Fight for 15, if memory serves, here in Boston, a guy named Jamie Eldridge, who I think is still a senator, or he just retired from the Senate,
mm-hmm.
Was arrested as part of the protest, as part of the peaceful protest in support of the $15 minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
But that allows us to segue to the third concept, right? So we start out with the Dakota Access Pipeline, which is a case in point of the kind of support climate activists need to provide to other groups. The Fight for 15 is a similar example. And then you rewind to this whole concept of nonviolent action. And one of the gurus of the climate movement, Mr. Bill McKibben, this past week received an award, I think the Jonathan Schell Award, for being a great guy, I guess. but McKibben gave a rather long speech detailing the power of direct nonviolent action, and
mm-hmm.
that as being the only currency that we have left in a Trumpian world. Did you see anything
mm-hmm.
like that?
Yes, it was a great speech in which he discussed the power of, as you know, nonviolent direct action, and it's citing specifically the role that it played in the Keystone XL protests.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said that, you know, it calls attention to itself because in an age where people prefer comfort, seeing people essentially embrace discomfort as a means of raising awareness about an issue, you know, gathers attention, gathers the public consciousness, and changes the zeitgeist, as he points out, that it sort of shifts the conversation,
which is
arguably the most important thing to do. And it reminded me of a great not so much of a speech, but a great sort of segment that Chris Hayes did 4 years ago on his show, where he noted about what he called the asymmetry of passion between those who try to defend the energy status quo and those who are opposed to it. And he noted, quote, the only way to get a sane climate debate in our national conversation is to create a cadre of activists and citizens who will care as passionately about saving the planet from ruin as those of the other side do about their industry, because they see and understand just as viscerally as the other side that, yes, this really is a life or death issue, unquote. And how what Hayes said 4 years ago, you know, is sort of parallel with what McKibben was saying now, that essentially the only thing that can be done is to have an engaged citizenry that will use these forms of nonviolent direct action in order to sort of cast a spotlight upon what other people would prefer to ignore.
Yeah, I mean, it's a quite interesting article. I recommend it. I mean, he touches base with Gandhi and Thoreau and Martin Luther King and all the icons of nonviolent action through the 20th century. And makes basically, he says, yeah, he calls it unearned suffering as a potent tool in order to for the many to resist the ruthless few. And it's encouraging in the sense that, I mean, I think he makes the point in the article that even in the American civil rights movement, the number of people who were actually the number of black citizens that were actually arrested is quite small. But as you say, it changed the zeitgeist, right? You could not avoid the conversation because of the committed people that were doing what they needed to do. I mean, I think, you know, in the wake of Trump's election, here we are. What are we going to do?
And when he talks about unearned suffering, who is not the greatest symbol in this time of unearned suffering as the person we've mentioned previously, Sophia Walensky, who's the water protector, who essentially got her arm blown off during one of the Dakota Access Pipeline protests. I mean, if that is not the symbol of somebody, you know, risking their health and their life for a cause, it's that.
Right. And I think that she had a some connection to the West Roxbury pipeline, right? Which of course in the Globe this morning, they're saying that despite the protest, despite all the opposition, despite the mayor not wanting it, I guess the gas is going to start flowing in that pipeline sometime soon. And it's continues to be an outrage, right? I think it's not clear what the city can do, right? But there you go. I mean, that West Roxbury experience, while it may be a temporary setback, assuming it continues on the path, it is one of these things that creates a cadre of people who have been arrested, who are willing to go and do that, right? God bless them.
And I think it hits home for a lot of people, sort of the bullying nature of this industry. I think people who might have considered this sort of issue sort of something of an abstract issue, now when it's literally hitting home, now they realize that this is a, as McKibben calls it, a rogue industry.
Yeah, well, and I think that, I mean, just to follow this thread along, let's go back. So we've got the Dakota Access Pipeline people as a symbol. We've got the Fight for 15 as another obvious example. We have the people in West Roxbury who have been getting arrested. We have Bill McKibben talking about the incredible power of nonviolent direct action, right? And all that comes to a boil in the concept of that, again, in the age of Trump, the locus of climate action is going to be in the cities. It's going to be in places that are less polarized, who see the consequences of climate change. I think the mayor of Miami is worried about climate change, right? The mayor of New York, the mayor of Boston. These are the places that can actually take action when the repulsive denialism of the Trump administration continues in D.C. It's the cities where something good can happen, right?
And the cities don't have the luxury of denialism. We've noted that there was a recent letter penned by the heads of several major cities, and I believe Mayor Marty Walsh of Boston was one of them, basically to the Trump administration, the incoming Trump administration, encouraging that administration not to sort of stick two middle fingers in the faces of those who are concerned about this issue. And obviously, you know, cities can lead because, again, you know, elected officials are, you know, as Tip O'Neill said all politics is local, and the city is the closest place where your voice can matter, can have an impact. And people who are mayors, people who are city councilors, they can't afford to ignore those voices. If they do, they'll be former mayors and former city councilors.
And I think that it's possible for the cities. The cities can control the building codes. Right? Mm-hmm. And there's a huge amount of a greenhouse footprint that goes into the energy used to heat and cool buildings. So, and that's something that's most of the time the cities have a big impact on. So there's residential efficiency. The other thing is there's traffic control. I mean, transportation, these are both things where lots of it goes on in the city and the cities have the opportunity to take action. But just so I mean, this is it's interesting, the conversation. There's two ways to go here. One, you say, look, in my city, I want to work with my mayor and get a concrete actions going. But it's also a place where relatively easy for nonviolent direct action to make that point. Right? You don't have to go to North Dakota to get arrested. Not that I'm saying anyone should get arrested, but you know what I mean.
And how interesting is it that Trump Tower is seated right in the middle of a city where you've had two consecutive mayors, Bloomberg and de Blasio, take this issue seriously and push aggressively for action?
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing...
I do wonder if Trump Tower is itself LEED certified.
It's a BS certified, that's for sure. But I mean, and I guess this was not the point of the conversation, but now that we have gone through all this, so here we are... I would remind everybody that's listening that the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, in its core, tries to help cities and towns reduce their climate footprint. So the MCAN is, a place that seems important in the new Trumpian era, even more important than ever, because the cities are where stuff's going to happen. The cities where you can have an impact. The jokers in D.C. are the jokers in D.C., but we can do stuff right here in our cities and town, and MCAN is poised to help. Well, there you go. That's a shameless plug that I didn't think wasn't clear we were going to reach. But anyway, I think the news of the week or the concept of the week is this McKibben-esque idea of nonviolent direct action. I will put up the link to the for people to read. But McKibben is speaking in a tradition of Thoreau, Gandhi, Martin Luther King. I mean, he is standing proud with some of the best, I think McKibben would call it, you know, sort of technologists of the 20th century. They've who unlocked an incredible power. So there you go. Oh my God, nonviolent direct action.
Yes, the only way to go.
The only way to go. Well, so we'll put up links to these things on the blog that's associated with this podcast, and that blog will be at massclimateaction.org/blog. Please go there, share the links, read up on it. It's interesting. You can find the podcast on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction. Please click there. Please share us so your friends can find out about us. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast or SoundCloud. You can find us on iTunes, of course, by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close where we always close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the Trumpian anti-democratic program be resisted and that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.